Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Here's a dramatic fact about solar power. Every 3 minutes, another American home or business goes solar. So the industry is booming across the country and here in Massachusetts. And a big incentive for solar customers is the opportunity to sell extra power that they produce back onto the commercial grid. It's called net metering, but currently there's a limit on how much power customers can sell back. With the region's growing interest in solar, half the state has already met the net metering cap. So Governor Charlie Baker has filed legislation to raise that cap, but electric companies like Eversource and National Grid say the cap would actually increase energy prices for customers who don't use solar. Solar advocates say net metering is one of the fastest ways to get people to adopt alternative energy production. To talk about the pros and cons of raising the net metering cap, we're joined by Janet Besser. She's Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs with the New England Clean Energy Council. She was also a member of the Governor's Net Metering and Solar Task Force, which released its report at the end of April. Welcome, Janet Besser. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Also with us, Amy Rabinowitz. She's Senior Vice President and Deputy General Counsel at National Grid. She was also a member of the task force. Welcome to you, Amy Rabinowitz. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
Janet, I want to start with you with some of the basics. Let's say I install a solar panel on my house. How does net metering help me?
Net metering helps you by letting you get a credit actually back against your bill. You're not selling power to the grid, but you're getting a credit for any excess power you produce at a point in time. So, for example, over the course of a month, you use a certain amount of electricity, your solar generation or other generation will produce a certain amount of electricity, and if you produce more than you use, then you get a credit that you can carry forward. And that helps you to pay for the cost of installing solar, because with a lot of these technologies, there's a large upfront capital cost, and you save money over time, and that's how you pay for the system.
All right. So there's a cap on how much power can be sold back or how much you can be credited for. So what's the argument in favor of raising that cap?
Well, the argument in favor of raising the cap is that it enables customers to take advantage of solar and to provide value to the grid, because not only do they save money, but by more and more customers installing distributed generation or solar, they help to reduce over time the cost of the distribution system. They reduce demand at peak times. And in New England, we run our most expensive generators at peak times. So if it's a hot summer day, 2 p.m, and you're producing solar, then in fact you can credit that back. And there are ways to give incentives to customers to make sure that they're installing solar in a manner that will increase its value to themselves, other customers on the grid.
All right. So, Amy Rabinowitz, let me come over to you. Why not raise the cap? Or maybe another way to ask the question is, does my use of solar panels affect my neighbor's energy bills?
The short answer is yes. Let me start by saying that National Grid is a big solar advocate, and we're number 5 in the nation for interconnections. And capping net metering is not a cap on solar. Net metering is merely part of the payment stream for solar energy, as you've said. We're concerned about the high prices our customers are bearing for solar, which is unnecessary. We shouldn't be paying more than we need to for solar. Massachusetts utility customers pay double for solar energy than other states in our area pay, such as Rhode Island and Connecticut. And if you compare this to the alternatives in Massachusetts, it's significantly more than basic service or even double the Cape Wind price, which many people were concerned
about.
So
why are we paying so much more here than in other parts of the country?
It's the way net metering works, which is that it's a credit not only for the actual electricity, but also for all of the other parts of a customer's utility bill, such as the cost for the poles and the wires and the back office systems and everything else that the utility does to provide safe and reliable service. And then in addition, there's a renewable energy credit that has been set for solar, which was created to incentivize solar. But that, for every bit of solar that's provided, customers get that credit too. The combination of those two create the high price for solar. And then the problem with it is, you would ask, is it increasing my neighbor's cost for solar? And the answer is yes, because the way net metering works, when a customer with solar is getting a net metering credit. Someone else is paying for those costs that the solar customer is avoiding.
Yeah.
And so that is really raising costs tremendously for customers without solar.
Now, I'm going to come back to you, Janet Besser, but Amy Rabinowitz, let me just follow up on this, because someone listening to your argument about sort of, you know, not raising the cap on net metering might ask, you know, does solar and this revolution in solar power really represent a lot of uncertainty for power companies like yours, like National Grid?
The answer is no. Our bottom line is not affected by solar, and National Grid is hugely in favor of solar and wanting to help deliver the future clean economy. The problem is that utility customers who do not have solar are bearing the burden of this, and they don't have to.
All right. So let me ask you about that concern, Janet Besser. This idea that people with solar panels are still using the grid, they're getting the benefits of the grid, but not necessarily paying what people without solar power are paying.
Thank you, Anthony. So in fact, customers who have solar do use the grid, but they also provide benefits back from the grid. And net metering is really a rough justice compensation for the value that they provide. And as solar has developed and the costs have come down, it is fair to ask whether this is compensation is at the right level. And that's, in fact, what the Net Metering Task Force recommended, that the caps be increased and that we figure out what is the right compensation level. To say that customers in Massachusetts are paying twice for solar, paying more for solar than in other states, skips by the fact that we have, with our incentives, generated a lot more solar here than in other states. This is not to criticize their methods, but in fact, you get what you pay for. And so we have got a lot of solar developed, over 800 megawatts of solar providing benefits, and in fact, that's what we're paying for. You also need to distinguish between net metering, which is compensation for the solar, and then the additional incentives that may be needed to encourage customers to put solar on their roofs. In fact, we agree with, I think the Net Metering Task Force all agreed, that we should be looking at the incentive mechanism and adjusting the incentives to reflect the declining costs for solar and other factors in the market.
Listeners, we want to invite you into this conversation. Do you have solar panels on your house? Were they worth it? If you haven't made the jump, why not? Do you live in a community that has already met its net metering cap? Do you think it's a good idea to raise that net metering cap? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I may be misunderstanding this, Amy Rabinowitz, but I want to come back to something that you said. So you raised the point and made a case that we pay more for solar power in this state than elsewhere. Wouldn't raising the cap on net metering make solar more affordable because it's going to provide greater incentives for people?
No. The problem is that the price that we're paying for solar, that customers are paying for solar, is set by the net metering plus this renewable energy credit. What we need to do is find a way to lower the price, to take advantage of the competitive market and other solutions that other states have done. There's a lot of headroom where if we're paying 45 to 60 cents a kilowatt hour, and Rhode Island and Connecticut are paying about 25 cents for the same, there's a lot of room there for us to come down in price and continue our terrific growth.
All right. And Janet Besser, does not raising the net metering cap slow down, in your view, the development of solar?
It certainly does, Anthony. Not raising the net metering cap, particularly at this time, means that projects are not moving forward. So there have been estimates that we're losing about $3 million in project investment as a result, $1 million in federal investment tax credits that could be coming to Massachusetts before those tax credits expire at the end of 2016, and we lose jobs because, in fact, the development of solar here has been a huge job creator. It has brought in something like $2.5 billion worth of investment. And the net benefit of solar development in the Commonwealth has been $9 billion, taking into account benefits versus costs.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean we can be more efficient? Sure we can. But in fact, if we don't lift the cap, projects are not moving forward. Projects that municipalities have done a lot of work on and are ready to move forward and now cannot because they've hit the cap where they're located. And that means money that doesn't come to that municipality that can help to fund schools, police, fire, other local services.
All right. So, Amy Rabinowitz, respond to that, because that sounds like a pretty strong case for raising the cap.
Yesterday, the Mass Taxpayers Report said that Massachusetts electricity costs are the third highest in the U.S. With electricity costs that high, that has a big impact on all of the other businesses in the state and affects their ability to remain in the state, create jobs, and be successful.
All right, let's go to our phones and get a couple of callers involved in this conversation. If you want to join the conversation about net metering, about the explosive growth, really, of the solar industry, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Eric, who's calling from Wenham. Eric, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I actually do have a solar system and been involved in the solar industry on the technology development side for a number of years. And my understanding of net metering is it basically allows you to spin the meter backwards when you're producing more than you're consuming. And but most installations, you're actually limited at how much you can install on your property based on what your electric bill actually is. So very few customers are actually spinning the meter backwards to the point where they're delivering back more than they're consuming. I just wanted to clarify that understanding, and also, you know, just thinking about how the demand for solar, the peak demand reduction that happens on those hot summer days, that is a huge benefit to the grid, which will lower costs for everybody.
All right, Eric, 2 points there. Janet, why don't you, I'd love you to sort of comment on the first part of what Eric was saying, that few customers are really taking advantage of this or are sort of able to actually get their meters to spin backwards.
Well, actually, your meter, whenever you're producing, I'm not sure if the meter literally spins backwards, but in effect, that's what happens. So if you're producing, your meter is spinning backwards, and you pay the utility company at the end of the month, the net there. In fact, I think in most cases, you can produce more in a given month than you've actually used and take that as a credit moving forward. There are limits on the size of the system that you can install. It has to be some relationship to the amount of electricity that you use, and in some cases, obviously limited by how much space you may have to put the panels on. So I think there's not necessarily a limit in an hour-by-hour basis, but so over the course of the year, it's maybe 100-125%.
Right. And Amy Rabinowitz, the caller makes an interesting point that utilities can benefit from net metering too, in so far as solar customers help utilities by shaving peak demand. Fair point.
Can I just back up 1 second and
sure.
say, in addition to what Janet just said, there is community solar, which is solar energy, which is not on top of a roof, but it's separate, sitting on a piece of land. And it all of the power from a community solar facility goes onto the grid and provides service to customers. And that is also getting the net metering credit as if it was behind a meter, but it's not. As to the caller's second point about helping the utility, what's interesting is that solar is at its peak when the sun is at its highest. So solar energy is generating most between 12 and 2 in the afternoon. That is not when an electric distribution peak is. That's much later in the day. It's early evening for all seasons except for the summer when it is in late afternoon. So in fact, it's not ideally helping right now.
All right. Let me bring another voice into this conversation. He's Jürgen Weiss. He's head of the Brattle Group's climate change practice. And Jürgen Weiss, welcome to Radio Boston. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having me.
I'd love you to chime in on this conversation. If I understand correctly, you've said that underlying this net metering debate is actually a broader discussion about structure. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that a big part of the debate is about whether or not customers with a solar roof, and I'm one of those actually recently, pay their fair share of system costs,
right?
Or whether those costs are borne by all the people who don't have a PV system on their roof. And that is largely driven by the fact that retail rates are what we call volumetric. So you pay almost exclusively based on the kilowatt hours you consume in a given month. Even though a lot of the costs of the electricity system actually don't vary by monthly consumption. So I, with my solar roof, can avoid, you know, paying the per kilowatt hour charge when part of that per kilowatt hour charge actually pays for fixed costs of the system. So even if we get rid of net metering, That underlying problem doesn't go away. I bring in Germany. Germany doesn't have net metering. What happens in Germany right now, because there too retail rates are volumetric, is there's a huge incentive for me to couple my own PV system with a battery in my garage, and therefore I can perfectly avoid paying these volumetric charges even though I don't have net metering. So I think as we have more PV capacity on the system, then that underlying structural issue becomes more important. By the way, I don't necessarily think that a state like Massachusetts is anywhere near a point where those cost shifts are very significant.
Interesting. Janet Besser, respond to this problem that Jürgen Weiss was talking about.
I mean, this is a real problem. I think, though, it's being solar and customer DG, or distributed generation, has been tagged with it. But customers have been reducing their kilowatt hour usage, or the volume of electricity they use, for the last 30 years by doing energy efficiency. And we would not say to a customer, no, you can't take advantage of your utilities and others' energy efficiency programs, because if you use fewer kilowatt hours, then somebody else who's using more kilowatt hours is going to be picking up the difference. Mm. That, in effect, happens. We acknowledge that. But the point is, you really want to be encouraging less usage, less of a carbon footprint, more generation that is clean. And this is a mechanism to do that. As Jürgen said, not having net metering doesn't make that problem go away. And so that's why one of the other recommendations of the task force is that the Department of Energy Resources here in Massachusetts, the DPU, the Department of Public Utilities, the regulatory agency, investigate that, calculate the value, and make sure there's both fair compensation for solar and fair compensation for use of the distribution grid.
We only have about 30 seconds left, and I just want to ask one more question. This is sort of a step-back question, and I'll stick with you, Janet, but sort of assess where we are. I mean, for the average homeowner, does it make sense today to invest in solar?
In Massachusetts, with the policy support for solar, for the average homeowner, there are many ways you can do this, and yes, it can make sense. You can pay for it up front, you can lease it, you can just take a discount on your electricity prices going forward. And that's a tremendous investment for the future.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there, and obviously the debate about net metering goes on. Janet Besser, Vice President of Policy, Government Affairs for the New England Clean Energy Council, thank you.
Thank
and
you.
Amy Rabinowitz, Senior Vice President and Deputy General Counsel for National Grid, thank you.
Thank you.
And Jürgen Weiss, head of the Brattle Group's climate change practice. Thank you, Jürgen, for joining us. We appreciate it. Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, want to play an instrument and drink whiskey at the theater? Composer Dave Malloy has just the show for you. Stick with me. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.